Yeah. And hit records on my demo. Did y'all boys not get the memo? I do not stay at the Intercontinental. And anything I got is not a rental. I own that mom. Figured out this shit is simple. My stock been going up like a crescendo. A bunch of handshakes from the fakes. But I do not wanna be friends though. I tell y'all, motherfucker, man, this not a love song. This a stripper on a mink rug song. This a them boys forever hold a grudge song. Pop some champagne in a tub song. Just because song. Dang, what's the move?
Okay. What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 210 of Electrified. I'm your host, Eric Lyons. What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? It's summer. It's summertime. Let me tell you something. So your boy got a little 2-week vacation, and then I got to go back to work. It's a little summer program for the summer, but Monday to Thursday, so I have my Fridays off. I have a 3-day weekend. Listen, long story short, the summer of Electrified starts today. Okay, get ready for an extreme influx of content coming at you from all different angles. I plan on working extremely hard this summer and not taking any week off. I'm not. So you got me even through the dog days of summer when there's nothing to talk about. Oh, I'm going to find us something to talk about. Don't worry. I ain't going to be no days off until it's almost time for football season. All right. So get ready for this. The summer of Electrified starts now. Yeah. But today we do have things to discuss in the world of boxing and obviously in the world of basketball. And then we have to talk about what's going on. A couple different training camp, mini camp stories coming out of the NFL right now that I also want to touch on. So let's get right into it. I don't want to waste anybody's time. First of all, congratulations to the Denver Nuggets on winning their first NBA championship in franchise history. That is huge. Also, congratulations to the Las Vegas Knights for also winning their first championship in franchise history. But see, the Knights are only like 6 years old, and they've had playoff success before. They've been to the Stanley Cup final before. So for them to win that thing in under 10 years, and a Vegas team winning a hockey championship is wild to me. So congrats to them. But the Denver Nuggets, let me tell you something first of all. NBA Twitter is full of losers, and their favorite thing to do is discredit winners. They hate to see people win championships. I don't know why. They do. So they try to discredit them. They try to find somehow, some way that championship win is flawed. And this has been happening for a few years now. I mean, you talk about the Cavs come back 3-1. They try to say that didn't count because Draymond got suspended for one game. They'll talk about the Warriors when they got KD. Oh, they had KD. Those championships, they bought those rings. They don't count. You can talk about the Raptors winning their ring. They'll say that was a flaw or that was a fraud because the Warriors weren't fully healthy. Then you got it. Obviously, the bubble. They just act like the bubble ring just is. They gave it to the Lakers. Like, it's weird. So now the conversation about the Nuggets is even stranger because the Nuggets were the best team all year. They're mad at the Nuggets because they had to play the 8 seed, they had to play a 4 seed, and they had to play a 7 seed, and then they had to beat an 8 seed to win the championship. You know what it sounds like to me? They got the benefits of being the best team all season. They were the number one seed. That's what happens when you're the number one seed. You don't go through much adversity. You don't go through much hardship because you were the best team all season. Why are you guys not understanding that? Why is that such a hard concept to grasp? The Nuggets were the best in the West, so they got the best possible seed, and they played who they played. Point blank. Like, how can you guys sit there and advocate for Jokic MVP all year? They give it to Embiid. You guys say, oh, Jokic should have got the MVP. Jokic gets his finals MVP. And then you try to act like that Jokic finals run was a sham. It's weird. It's very strange. And I know I'm not the only one who has been seeing this. I know maybe this isn't the national media's narrative. I don't know. I don't pay attention to the national media. I don't watch sports talk shows like that unless it's Pat McAfee or the Rich Eisen show. You guys know that. But from what I've seen online in the Twitter sphere, this is the conversation that's being had. It's very strange. It is. Because how can you discredit a team because they were the best all year and they just played who they played? It's strange, man. It's strange. Like, they were the number one seed for a reason. They played like they were the number one seed. They made easy work of everybody that they played against. I would say the Suns, obviously, because they won more games than everybody that they played against. But even so, they moved past them. The Lakers had their opportunities against the Nuggets, but the Nuggets made easy work of them in four games. All right. The Miami Heat served the Denver Nuggets their first home loss in I don't know how long in game two of the finals. That was a win right there for the Heat. I was satisfied right there. I said, you know what? We ain't even supposed to be here. I'll take that. Whatever happens, happens. Because the Nuggets were the best team. They were the better team. They were. I don't care how you spin it, man. You look at the Nuggets and the Heat, and you tell me who was going to win the championship. Even though the Heat could have. But we're going to get into the Heat and what happened to them and how they just fell apart. But right now, the Denver Nuggets, man. Do you know how many... Fam, they went 53-29, number one in the West. And they played team basketball. They were second in the league in assist. So Jokic is spreading the wealth. It's not just him scoring out there. They play good basketball. I don't like Mike Malone, but he's a hell of a coach. This team is a well-oiled machine. They're big. They're physical. And they have Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray on their team. You got two stars. You got Aaron Gordon. And you got your players like your KCPs, your MPJs, your Bruce Browns, who come in, do the dirty work, and hit shots, certain shots when need be. You can't get mad at that. There's nothing, there's literally nothing that you could say that would make me be like, you know, maybe if they would have ran into... Like, you're not going to sit here and tell me that if the Lakers didn't come out of the Golden State series, that the Golden State Nuggets, Golden State Warriors are going to beat the Denver Nuggets. Or, opposite of that, you're not going to sit here and tell me that the Celtics were going to do anything more than the Heat did. You're not, fam, the Celtics are going to get swept. They were going to get swept. I give the Heat credit for getting a game. But the Celtics were going to get swept. Berms were going to be out for them. I'm sorry. Like, fam, Mike Malone, what's the Celtics coach name? He was going to put Buddy in a blender. Like, I'm not even just talking about Tatum and Brown and, you know, the players. But coaching, the lights were going to be too bright for Buddy. They were. Mike Malone was going to literally put him in a blender. I'm just saying. Like, and y'all know I'm not lying. I'm not, because the job he did against Spoelstra was a great job. So, could you imagine what he would have done to the Celtics head coach? Come on. Come on. So, the same way that I don't want people to discredit the Nuggets for playing who they played and having that run that they had and then getting to the championship, getting to the finals and doing what they did to the Miami Heat, I don't want you to discredit the Miami Heat. Because listen, early in the year, the Heat had Udonis Haslem playing first half minutes and guarding Jason Tatum 1-on-1. Like that was a thing. The Heat had multiple injuries. They really weren't supposed to make it this far. They lost the first game of the play-in. Had to win a second game in the play-in just to get the 8 seed, secure the 8 seed. And then they're there. They're in the playoffs. Then they go up against a Bucks team. And as a Heat fan, I wasn't scared of the Bucks. I'm gonna be honest with y'all. I wasn't scared of the Bucks. Got them out of there in five. So the Miami Heat start off as the 8 seed. What's the first thing they do? They knock off the number one seed. They knock off the number one seed. All right. What do they do next? They play the five, beat the New York Knicks in six games. Then they go up against the second best team in the East, the Boston Celtics, same team that put them out in seven games last year. And then they beat them in seven games. This is a magical run for the Heat. And it's interesting because last year, the Miami Heat were the number one seed in the East from like Christmas to April. Like they locked that in for a long time. Like the Heat were much, I don't know, they were winning a lot of games last year. Nobody cared that the Heat were the number one seed last year. You probably didn't even know the Heat were the number one seed until they played Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. You probably didn't know. Nobody cared. But this season, the Heat are the 8 seed, and for whatever reason, this run was a little more noisier than the quiet 1 seed run last year. Everybody was just so surprised. Like, nobody picked them to beat the Bucks. Nobody picked them to beat the Knicks. Nobody really beat them to pick Boston. They won all three of those series. They didn't give us a chance in hell against the Nuggets, and I get that. I understood that. I had blind optimism. Like, I remember I told y'all we was going to win the next two at home. That was a lie. The lie detector determined that was a lie. That was blind optimism, man. I knew what it was. The Nuggets were bigger and better than the Heat. And I don't know if the lights were too bright for Max Strus, Duncan Robinson, or Gabe Vincent. I don't know. But wow. What a night and day performances from that Boston series to what we got from them in that finals series. My God. And Jimmy, fam, I sent Jimmy Butler a UPS application for a UPS location in Naples, Florida, because that was the closest thing to Miami I could find. They're hiring for package and warehouse handlers, so I told Jimmy, you know, seek employment. Because, brother, I don't know what the hell or who the hell that was hooping for you, but that didn't look like Jimmy Butler. And I hadn't seen Jimmy Butler since like game two of the Boston series, if we're being honest. And in this series, he just really pissed me off. Like, the other night in game five, you had 8 points going into the fourth quarter, shooting 2 for 11. Okay. Then all of a sudden, you hit two threes. You hit a three. One, you get fouled. That wasn't really a foul. You hit all of them in the free throw line. Then you start attacking the basket. I'm like, where the hell was this at all game? I'm so confused. But he just had a horrible finals. Didn't really have a good Eastern Conference Finals. He just disappeared. They're dribbling all the way to the basket and kicking it out. The turnovers. I mean, fam, literally dribbling under the basket. Go up. Be a man, bro. This is not the same Jimmy I saw give LeBron all he can handle in 2020. It's not the same Jimmy I saw damn near die in the bubble. This is not the same Jimmy that I saw last year fighting for his life against the Celtics. I just don't know who this guy was, bro. Like, I don't even know if he had a 20-point game this series or since game two of the Celtics series. Yes, he did. Game six, he did. But, fam, I don't know what happened to Jimmy. And this is the guy that's supposed to be the star. He's supposed to be him, Jimmy Butler. We say we build Jimmy up because, oh, playoff Jimmy. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that no more. Because this was embarrassing, bro. He just looked like he didn't know what he was doing out there. It was strange. And I don't want to hear anything about no ankle injury. No, I don't want to hear that. Don't want to hear it. I'm sorry. Don't want to hear it. Like, I think about the shot he took last year in game 7. I respected that a lot more than whatever the hell that was the other night, that turnaround. Oh my God, he took like a turnaround three. It was so bad, bro. I'm like, you practiced that shot? For real, you couldn't have. And it was like he was relying too much on role players. Like, fam, they're not knocking him down. Strus missed like 20% of his wide open threes. It's not happening. It's not happening tonight. You have to be a man. The only two men, only two guys on the team that said, I'm going to be a man and I'm going to play hard, is Bam Adebayo and Kevin Love. K Love came out there and was playing balls to the wall. But Bam was aggressive on offense and he was stellar on defense. I was so proud of Bam because y'all know I gets on Bam. I call Bam Scam Adebayo. But Bam did his thing in his finals, man. He really did, and I was proud of him. Okay, I was. But the Nuggets were just a better team, man. Like, the Nuggets had, in game four, Jokic was in foul trouble. He had five fouls, and he sat, like, almost the whole second half. He couldn't do nothing. They couldn't do nothing. They couldn't score. They couldn't score. I think that game two for the Miami Heat was the best that they could do. They gave the Nuggets all they could handle in game two. And I just don't think they had four of those in them. I don't. I think that they had to play perfect four quarters of basketball four times. And they couldn't do that, man. They put together good halves. Good halves. But you got to play four quarters of basketball when you're going up against the best team in the league. That, oh yeah, Miami Heat, they've been making comebacks all year. Not now, bro. Not now is not the time to be like, yeah, we're down by 15. Yeah, we can make this happen. Because it's not against this team. Because you're going to score, and they're going to keep scoring too. You can't come back if the other team keeps scoring. And I mean, I'm talking about these wild shots, like demoralizing buckets that Jokic and Jamal Murray are making. Demoralizing. Demoralizing. And then you know it's really time to pack it up when MPJ start doing stuff. Because he, my God, that's when you know it's time to go home. For real. But as far as the summer goes for the Heat, they have to get somebody else. They got to get a score. Another score and a big. So bring me Kyrie and bring me DeAndre Ayton. And we can have a conversation in October. But as of right now, I'm good on the Heat. The Nuggets, all they got to do is run it back. That's it. Run it back. Run it back. Shit, they might even bring in somebody else. I don't know, bro, because the Nuggets, I just don't see, unless something drastic happens in the West, who is stopping them next year other than themselves? Like, you know, because health is wealth. But I don't know, man. It just seems like this Nuggets team is going to be, they're going to be a problem for us sometime. So, once again, congratulations to the Denver Nuggets for doing what they were supposed to do. You know, because when you're that good, man, when you're that good and you're the number one seed, it shouldn't go any other way. Should not go any other way. So, congratulations to them. All right, so from the court to the ring, the squared circle, the sweet science. This past Saturday night, Josh Taylor and Teofimo Lopez squared off in Madison Square Garden for the 140-pound, I think it was the WBO championship belt. I didn't even give you guys a preview of this fight because, honestly, I forgot about it. Like, I had forgot that fight was coming. It's been so much going on sports-wise. I was like, oh, damn, that fight is this weekend. But it was free. It's on ESPN. And Saturday I went back and looked into, you know, the things that were said going into the fight. And Teofimo Lopez, he's a weird guy, bro. Before we get to the fight, him and his pops, they're so strange. And I love my dad. I love dads that are in their children's lives. You gotta be, especially for sons. But in this business, in that sport, fam, I'm good off of Bill Haney and Teofimo Sr. I don't need to see them all in the music videos, dance. Like, I understand what Suge was saying about Puff. I'm here to see the boxer. I'm here to see the artist, not the producer. I'm not here to see you. I get tired of seeing their fathers, bro. I'm sorry. Always in the spotlight. Always in the pictures. Always talking. Oh, shut the hell up. Please. Like, y'all. It's like it's a thing going on with dads right now. Like, what's the kid's name? They call him Baby Gronk. That whole situation is a freaking dumpster fire. It makes me want to call CPS. But that's a whole nother thing. Now, leading up to the fight, Teofimo Lopez, I think this happened on Twitter or somewhere. I didn't see it. I didn't know this happened until last week, but this happened at the end of April. Because in his sit down with Mark Kriegel, he started talking about it again, but Teofimo's dad stepped in there and was like, yo, stop talking about that, talk about the fight. It's a whole thing. Let me read y'all some of this. So, Teofimo Lopez took aim at the way Andre Ward and Timothy Bradley discussed previous fights, particularly during his upset loss to George Kambosos Jr. and his last fight, a close split over Sandor Martin. In a stormy, wide-ranging rant, Lopez also referred to, quote, black fighters in a manner that many on social media seem to view as being either racially insensitive or flat-out racist. Here's what he said. So, Lopez told Punch Drunk Boxing. He says, this is the thing. Commentators are the ones that convince everybody someone else is winning. So watch the Kambosos fight without the commentators. Watch my last fight without the commentators and you will see the results. At the fighters meeting, I dissed Andre Ward and Timothy Bradley in front of ESPN's production for all the affiliation and corruption that they do, Lopez said. And what happened? I put more weight on my back and all they was talking about right away when I slipped on the first knockdown they called. So he's just complaining about the commentary at ESPN. Alright, okay. I don't necessarily let commentary at ESPN either. I'm not a fan of ESPN's production of boxing. Like, I get that. Alright, so I'm rolling with you so far. I slipped, they called it right anyway. They called it right away. What did Bradley say? He's hurt. So I don't sugarcoat shit. All these mother effers do is dick ride. They say, oh my god. It's like D-I-C-K. Sorry for my language, but that is the problem. I don't ride off that. Lopez then stated that his next fight, title shot against 140-pound WBO titleist Josh Taylor on June 10th on the theater, will be his last fight on ESPN. And just to put it on the spot, this is my last fight on ESPN. Lopez continued, I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. This is why this fight means everything to me. If they want black fighters, they can keep them. I brought Bud Light to top rank. So, that was it. The comment about black fighters immediately sparked a firestorm online in response to the backlash. Lopez's father, Teofimo, went on to outlet to defend his son. It says that something's not a bigot. When my son said, Top Rank can stay with all their black fighters because you know what it is. When Devin Haney came to Top Rank and all this, they promoted him more than they promoted my son. Nah. I'm not rolling. I can't roll with that, man. I can't. Because here's the thing. I don't want to make this sound bad, but that's not true. It's not true. Teofimo Lopez. He's always fighting. His night has been Heisman night, right? His big fights, some of his big knockouts have been on Heisman night. He puts on a Heisman jersey. He did the Heisman pose. Like, ESPN made a thing out of that. Like, Teofimo Lopez was Heisman night, right? For a while, they went hand in hand. ESPN picked Teofimo up for some time. They built him up on Top Rank. His meteoric rise happened on Top Rank. They put a lot into him, right? I don't think they promote him or Haney or Shakur any different. I think that ESPN and Top Rank promote all of their fighters the same. Even Tyson Fury. I really don't see where that statement even came from. I don't. And I didn't know that he was specifically talking about Top Rank and ESPN. I didn't know that. until recently. But even so, when you talk about, oh yeah, because he got deeper. He did get deeper into it. He did. He started talking about, I think when he sat down with Kriegel, he was like, you know, in our sport, black fighters, and then his dad came and stopped. Listen, if you feel like black fighters in the sport of boxing are being prioritized over you, I'm confused. I'm just confused. It's confusing because the face of boxing is a pale, redhead Mexican man. Like, what are we talking about right now? What are we talking about? The cash cow is a pale, redhead Mexican. And you're talking about black fighters getting prioritized over you? Be better. How about you be better? Like, be better. Because you did not look great in your last two fights. You didn't look great. And you know you didn't look great. You had a lot going on. Mentally, physically, emotionally, whatever the case may be. You had a lot going on. And you looked like trash your last two fights. You did. You know you did. After your last fight, you were like, do I still got it? Those were your words. So don't sit here and try to blame Top Rank or black fighters for why people are looking at you a certain way or people are talking about you a certain way. Don't do that, bro. Don't do that. That's weak and it's lame. It is. Very weak. Very weak. You can't be this guy who boasts about being, oh yeah, I bounced back from this, strong. You can't have that type of mentality and then start pointing your finger at other people on why things are going the way they're going. No, I'm not rolling with that. Not. And it's like you didn't even have to say that. You didn't have to say you can keep the black fighters. Like, why did that come out your mouth? Why? Tyson Fury's bigger than you. He fights on Top Rank. You ain't bring his name up. What's the problem? What's the problem, bro? Like, what is really the root of the issue here? Are you jealous? You mad? Like, what is it? You want to be black? I mean, because you come out to Biggie at your fight. Why you ain't come out to Bad Bunny? Why you ain't come out to Ozuna? Why you ain't come out to Aventura? Why, like, I'm confused. Help me understand. You could have came out to Big Pun. Came out to Biggie. But you got a problem with black fighters. But you want to come out to black mute. Never mind. I don't want to go there. Because listen, when y'all talk about that POC, people of color, we're all together under one umbrella, that is BS. It's bull. I never subscribe to that. Call a spade a spade. But that's a whole different conversation. I don't even want to get there. Let's talk about the boxing. Talk about boxing. I just had to address that because it was strange to me. It was strange. But we can talk about the boxing. So let's talk about the boxing. I was genuinely surprised at what I saw Saturday night. I really was. Genuine surprise. I haven't been surprised like that in a long time. I was surprised because my expectations for this fight, they weren't that high, right? They weren't that high. Both of these guys were coming off of controversial wins. They both looked like trash their last fights. And Teofimo Lopez has had so much going on outside of the ring. I'm saying a lot of crazy stuff. Like, bro, he was like, he wanted to kill Josh Taylor. He also wanted to die in the ring. It was like, this was a very unserious event. I couldn't put my finger on how this fight was gonna go. With this being his what, second fight at 140, Josh Taylor, the champion, the bigger guy, the bigger man, and he looked much bigger than Teofimo Lopez once they got inside the ring, and you know, after rehydration, he looked huge. First round, I was like, okay, we're gonna have a fight here. Second round, all right, we're gonna have a fight here. Third round, I'm like, starting to look like it's about to be a good night for Teofimo Lopez. And boy, was it. So, the first round, Josh Taylor, he was very aggressive, right? Josh Taylor was very aggressive. He came forward. He was imposing his will. He wanted to show everybody, yo, I'm the bigger man. I'm the champion. This little man can't do nothing with me. And early on, the exchanges were pretty even. Like, they were both throwing and catching each other in exchanges. But Taylor's left to the body, and had, they were clean. He was landing some good left hooks. And Teofimo, he had moments in the first round, but nothing to the extent of, you know, the work that Taylor did. One thing that pissed me off, Teofimo kept stopping the action by putting his head down and causing the bigger man and Josh Taylor to lean over, you know, lean on him. And early on, Lopez kept looking for the ref in the tie-ups instead of fighting through it. And I don't like that. I don't like when you immediately stop because you can get hurt like that. And Josh Taylor has knocked somebody out like that. And he almost caught Teofimo looking at the ref. Another thing that happened, Lopez, in the fifth round, that's really when the momentum started to shift. He landed a bunch of big punches in the fifth. A bunch of them. Like, Taylor threw, but he had little accuracy. Like, Lopez, he got very comfortable and stole a lot of the early rounds. Because the early rounds were really back and forth, back and forth. Like, those rounds were getting won for me, because I scored a fight. For me, in, like, the last 50 seconds of the rounds. Like, that's when somebody said, okay, I'm going to close the show. It was how they closed the round for me is when I gave, you know, I decided on who won the round because they were pretty evenly matched throughout the round. So you had to close the round impressively for me to give you the round. And I'm big on accuracy. Like, I know activity is a thing and being active, but I'm big on accuracy as well. So if you're active and accurate, yeah, you're going to get points from me. You're going to get points from me. And it's easier said than done to see what lands and what doesn't land, but it's not that hard. It can't be. So as a judge sitting ringside with the best view, I'm sitting on my ass at home watching on TV. How am I scoring the fight better than y'all? You understand what I'm saying? So yeah, we're going to get to my scorecard in a minute, and we're going to talk about their scorecards, but I want to finish talking about what I saw in the fight itself. Teofimo, man, by like the eighth round, his confidence was on 1,000. Like, he started doing the pop shots. He was dropping his hands. He was throwing like lunging uppercuts, fam. He was throwing punches that you usually don't throw in a fight. He's putting his hands down. He's doing a Philly cross. Like, fam, it was his night. He was on 10. Right? I thought it was a blowout. I thought the fight was a blowout. I didn't think the fight was close at all. I gave round one to Josh Taylor, and then rounds 2 through 9 were all Teofimo Lopez rounds for me. The only reason I gave Josh Taylor number round 10 was because Teofimo obviously took that round off because he knew he was firmly in control of the fight. He took that round off. Then round 11 I gave to Lopez. Round 12, he almost knocked Josh Taylor out. Josh Taylor was out on his feet. So I scored that a 10-8 round because it looked like he was done. So all in all, my final scorecard was, what, 119-108? Fam, two judges scored the fight, 115-113. Mike Coppinger of ESPN had it like 116-112 or something like that. Like, but as he's scoring in the fight, and that's another thing I don't do when I score the fight, I don't look on Twitter because I follow a couple of boxing analysts, and I know I follow a bunch of boxing fans, and I'm not looking to see how y'all are looking at the fight. All I care is about my view of the fight, and I had it as a blowout. But I'm looking at Mike Coppinger. I'm like, fam, what fight are you watching? Seriously. So two judges had it 115-113. Fam, if they gave another round to Josh Taylor, that would have been a majority draw, and he would have kept his belt. It's nasty, man. It's nasty. The last judge scored at 117-111. I said, like, see, that makes sense. It was not close. It was not close. You look at the CompuBox numbers. Only there were only two rounds when Lopez got outlanded by Josh Taylor, and it was the first two rounds. After that, total punches landed from 3rd to 12th, 11-7, 17-8, 13-8, 11-4, 12-9, 10-8, 20-3, 9-8, 16-3, 21-2. Fam. It was a long night for Josh Taylor, man. It was a long night. All in all, Josh Taylor threw 341 punches, only landed 82, which is 24%. Teofimo Lopez threw 517, landed 158, which is 30.6%. He outlanded Josh Taylor. It was a dominant fight. It was a dominant display of boxing for Teofimo Lopez. I didn't see it any other way. I didn't think it was close. I didn't score it close. I thought it was impressive. So for Teofimo Lopez to do this, come out looking as good as he did, exercise the demons that he had to exercise, and for him to come out and say, "I'm retiring from the sport of boxing." I don't know, man. I don't know what's wrong with this guy. I don't understand him. I don't get his mental. But hey, you want to go out on top at age 25? I'm not mad at you. Do your thing, pimp. Congratulations and happy retirement. We'll see you in about a year or two. We'll see you soon. Something else that happened this past weekend in the world of boxing, if you want to call this boxing. Floyd Mayweather had another exhibition match. Another one. And this time he went up against John Gotti III. So let's be clear on who John Gotti III is. I think he's like John Gotti's grandson. The Gotti family was an Italian mob family. And the build up for this fight, I guess it was a little intense. I guess they, you know, some little animosity there. Because, you know, Italians and black folk, we not really the best of friends. So yeah, I could see where some of this, you know, animosity was going. But fam, it's 2023. Y'all talking about the Gotti family like it's 1965 or something. Fam, ain't nobody scared of them in 2023. Like, fam, I can name you a bunch of people I'm more scared of than the Gotti family. YSL. 4K Trey. The Wu-Tang Clan. Who else? 4BF. YBS. Like, there's a lot of groups that I'm more afraid of than the Gotti family in 2023. Like, Jay Prince will probably scare me a little more than them. Like, fam, nobody's scared of the Gotti family. Like when y'all talk about, "Oh, Floyd, better be careful now. He just may be with the Gotti." Fam, who cares? Y'all see how Floyd roll, man. Anybody scared of no damn Gotti family, man? I'm scared of the goddamn money team and what they could do to me. Anybody worried about the damn Gottis? Shit, I'm more scared of Irv Gotti and Murder, Inc. Anybody worried about the goddamn Gotti family in 2023? Get the hell out of here, man. But I knew this entire night was just top to bottom. You know, top to bottom insanity. As soon as the event started, it was something, man. It was something. This is a Zeus production. If you don't know what Zeus is, that's a show with the bad boys and the baddies, and it's a very, very interesting content. It's $4.99 a month if you want to tune in. I tune in every now and then. But you had Blueface and Krishan performing. They kept the lights down in the crowd so you didn't know how many people weren't there. You had Antonio Tarver on commentary with two other people. It was a spectacle. It was what it was. You know, it was what it was. But you got this going on. Then you finally get Floyd. And Floyd comes out with like 100 people. And it takes forever for them to get their corner cleared. The fight starts. Floyd's just whooping him, man. And it's like, it's so crazy to me at 46 years old, the reflexes are still there. The punt, like, he was popping the hell out of that dude, bro. And it's like, fam, this is crazy. And that guy was huge. And Floyd is talking. I mean, he is chatting. He's smiling. He's sticking his tongue out. He's laughing at this guy. And Kenny Bayless is tired of it. Floyd said, "Hold on, Kenny, nah. Let me keep beating this bitch's ass." Wow. That was aggressive. Like, fam, this is crazy. So John Gotti III got in his feelings after Kenny Bayless stopped the fight. He rushed Floyd. And my thing is, fam, If you couldn't beat Floyd in a boxing match, what the hell you thought you were going to do in a regular, like, fist fight? Floyd didn't take his eyes off of him the whole time, backed up on the ropes and everything. Gotti threw like 5 punches, none of them landed. Floyd threw a sweeping right counter, boom, moved him. And then after that, the Money Team Army hopped in the ring. And it was mayhem. I'm not gonna lie, I was a little scared. I was like, oh my God, this is actually happening. It was like what happened with Floyd and Zab times 30. Like, it was a lot going on in there. You know, it was entertainment, though. I thought it was entertaining. I think Floyd will be a little more cautious of who he gets in there with, because everybody ain't just in there, oh, it's Floyd Mayweather. Like, some of these dudes might actually want to hurt you, Floyd, but I'm not worried about Floyd's safety in there, man. Floyd know what he's doing. He know what he's doing, man. And it's Floyd Mayweather at the end of the day. Come on, fam. Come on. But yeah, I just thought that was crazy. And watching it in real time was wild. Like, I was like, fam, this is actually happening right now. Let's see. You know what? I'll save the minicamp stuff for another time. I think I'll let you guys out of here. Because, listen, man, it's going to be a long, little vacation. I'll probably be back in here, what's today, Wednesday? I'll probably be back in here on Friday. So, yeah, we're going to talk more on Friday. Because we waiting for this impending John Morant situation to come. So, we're going to have that to talk about. We'll see more, I'll do more digging into the Saquon Barkley. You know what? I'm not even going to do that. I'm lying to y'all. Let's get into it. Saquon Barkley is not coming to minicamp, right? He's not. I don't think he's showing up. Like I talked about last episode, Saquon Barkley just watched Daniel Jones get paid. Saquon Barkley had a bounce back year last year. These running backs know their worth, man. They know their worth. They do. They're tired of being treated like second-rate citizens, second-class citizens to these quarterbacks. Like, you can't put this load on me and say, yeah, here, carry the ball 25 times a game and then pay me next to nothing and expect me to be okay with that. And I'm watching guys walking around here getting bags. Nah, man. And you think I'm about to come out there and risk my bodily limbs for training camp? Nah, I'm not going to do that. Find me, because no, bro, it's not happening. It's not happening. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to kids aspiring to be running backs. It's not. Like, if I'm a kid right now, maybe I'm in high school, I play running back, and I'm looking around. I'm looking at, I know where I want to be. I want to go to the NFL. If I'm looking at what's going on, and I go to college, and I'm looking at these running backs get paid next to nothing, it's like, damn, do I really want to play running back? Or do I need to switch my position? Like, it's unfortunate. But what's this, 2023? In 10 years, are we still going to be talking about the superstar running back? How much will the game change if the pay scale for running backs doesn't change? Like, we could potentially kill off the running back. Think about that. If these kids coming out of college or going into college are like, yo, I'm not playing running back. Think about the type of running backs you're going to start seeing, because nobody wants to play the position. It's no money in it. That's how it looks. That would be crazy, though. But it makes sense. They could potentially kill off the star running back, because it's unfortunate, because there are guys out here that are just built to play running back. Like, I'm not saying I would have been, like, a top 5 rusher or something. I'm not. Listen, bro, I stopped playing football when I was in 9th grade. I played rec. The highest form of football I've ever played is rec football. I didn't like my high school's coaches, and I just was done with football. I was done with it. But I can tell you, with a straight face, and I'm not BSing you, I'm not just saying this just because I was built to play running back. Like, I have running back legs. Like, I could, fam, I'm not tall at all. Like, y'all know that. I'm not tall at all. I'm more like a Ray Rice, Maurice Jones-Drew type of back. But if I really, like, if I, in hindsight, if I really put work in, bro, I could have made some noise at the high school level. Maybe, you know, at a D2 school or something like that, if I really wanted to play. But if I had that, if I've thought like that and I took that route, I'd have been like, damn, is it worth it? Beating my body up trying to get to the league just to get to the league and barely make a, you know, barely make league minimum. Like, do I really want that? You know what I mean? It's different, though, because everybody's not making CMC money. Everybody isn't getting the money that Dalvin Cook made. Like, you look at Derrick Henry's contract, that they undervalue Derrick Henry, which is crazy. These running backs want their bread, bro. They want their bread, especially when you're on a team with an average-ass quarterback who just got paid. So, I'm with Saquon Barkley, bro. Now, I think the Le'Veon Bell approach, he's an anomaly, but he wasn't the same after, you know, just sitting out. But I don't think I would take it that far, but I don't know. Then you got this Stephon Diggs situation. Now, me and bro, one of my sources, me and bro, we've been talking about this for months, like months now. Like, he wants out of there. I don't care that they talking about, yeah, he'll be at minicamp. Fam, Sean McDermott said he was concerned. Josh Allen is talking about, yeah, it's not football related. We got some things to work on. So what is the problem? What's the problem? Because the last time we saw y'all, y'all had a little debate on the sideline in that divisional game. So in that divisional game. So what's T, sis? What's T, for real? What's going on over there? Like, I know everything, we can't put everything out in the open, but there's obviously an issue, so let's not sugarcoat it. Stop trying to paint it like it's not. If your coach is talking about he's concerned, he's concerned. Now, y'all just paid him last year, so it's going to be very hard to get rid of him. Very hard. You can't just let him walk. You're going to have to, if it comes down to it, you'd have to trade him. But I don't think that Stephon Diggs wants to be there anymore. I don't. I think that honeymoon phase is over. I think that him and Josh Allen aren't really on the same page like we thought they were. But this is all speculation. I could be wrong. But I really think that the Diggs and Allen era ain't going as well as they thought it would go. As well as he thought it would go. Right? So, yeah, I don't know. And then especially when you got D-Hop out there circling around, taking trips, taking visits. It's like, well, fam, what does Diggs do if somehow D-Hop goes to Buffalo? Like, or D-Hop goes to a team in the AFC East? Like, how does that make him feel? I don't know. I just feel like Diggs is a I need the ball every play type of guy, and that Josh Allen is not that type of quarterback, and the Bills aren't that type of team. Like, you have to spread the ball around. I don't know. Especially when you don't have a running back, because everybody knows, everybody's stadium knows, okay, they're going to try to get Diggs the ball, so let's go put two on him. And then you got other guys that'll get open. Like, that's really how it be looking sometimes. Like, Diggs, he gets his, but it's hard when it's really, you know, you're the top, and then you don't have any other type of, you know, secondary game to fall back on. Everybody knows where the ball's going, bro. It's hard. It is. Then you got D-Hop. He's making his rounds. I heard Tennessee. I heard New England. I would like Tennessee, though. I would like him to go to Tennessee. I heard Houston. But for me, if I had to pick five teams where D-Hop, you know, where I would like to see him, I'd say Baltimore, Tennessee. Baltimore, Tennessee, Jacksonville. Yeah, I would like to see him in Jacksonville, low key. Unfortunately, the Jets, if they could afford it. And then number five. Let me think. Denver could use him. Denver could use a D-Hop. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see where he lands, though. We'll see. But, yeah, man. Thank you guys for tuning in. Like I said, I'll probably be back here Friday. You can expect me back here Friday, maybe sooner. I don't know when you'll see when you get a good listen to me. But best believe I'll be back here sometime this week, but possibly Friday. But thank you guys for tuning in, man. I appreciate it. Thank you guys for all your support. Continue to support. Make sure you go listen to the last episode. It was a banger. Make sure you listen to this episode. Like, retweet, share, all that good stuff. Got some good things cooking up for y'all, man. I ain't gonna lie to you. I do. I'm cooking, bro. I'm cooking. Let him cook. For real. Let him cook. But yeah, I'm gonna get out of here, man. Get my life together. I'm going to see my Blue Jays tonight. They got smoked last night, so let's hope we have a better outing tonight than we did last night. Because listen, man, I'm not gonna lie, the O's is looking good, man. The O's is looking good. I can't lie to y'all. They're looking good. So I'm gonna go see, you know, what we do tonight. I'm not going to the game tomorrow. I don't do day games. I don't do day games. But yeah, we'll see how we look tonight. Let's go, Bo. Let's go, Vladdy. Let's go, Spring. Let's go, Witt. Let's go, Captain Kirk. Let's go, Jays. All right. Man, thank you guys for listening. And for the 210th time, I'm Eric Lyons, and you have just been electrified.
Jordan, this right here is cut. Yeah, I feel big, you know what I mean? Like, not big in the sense of weight, you know what I mean? Like, gaining weight or nothing like that. Like, colossal, like, you know what I mean? Like, I heard you were looking for me.
Hey, Mr. Carter.
Hello.
Tell me, where have you been?